You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including an ethics complaint, the future of Ashland City Hall, and an unfair labor practice complaint in Klamath Falls. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
I'm Roman Battaglia, science, environment, and politics reporter.
And I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
And Justin, you reported on an ethics complaint against a Klamath County commissioner. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, so Klamath County Commissioner Andrew Nichols actually submitted this complaint in late February, and it's against fellow commissioner Derek DeGroot. So in the letter Nichols sent to the Oregon Government Ethics Commission, he says there's evidence that DeGroot may have used his position for personal financial benefit. DeGroot, is a commissioner, and he also sits on the board or did sit on the board of the South Central Oregon Economic Development District. So we actually got a tip about this story. Someone had submitted a public records request involving this complaint, and they got back a lot of documents, which they sent over to us, luckily. And that includes this ethics complaint that Nichols sent. So I spoke with Nichols, and he confirmed that the complaint is real. I just want to bring that up to say, you know, sometimes these tips and efforts by the public are really important for us in covering news for the region. You know, we can't listen to every county commission meeting, and it helps when locals who are really deep in the weeds of politics help us out there.
And what does the complaint say DeGroot may have done?
So first, the complaint couches its language a lot. So Nichols says he respects the process of investigating these things, and he doesn't want people to assume DeGroot is guilty before then, and before we hear more from the commissioner. But the allegations do seem serious. They involve DeGroot's property dealings in the county. The complaint says that DeGroot directed county staff to provide him with non-public foreclosure information. So that's data on homes that will be foreclosed and then sold to private parties. And at least in one of those cases, Nichols alleges that information led to a family member of DeGroot acquiring a property and then transferring it to the commissioner. The complaint also alleges DeGroot was involved in grant funding that benefited properties he or his family owns, and these properties received substantial revitalization funds through the American Rescue Plan Act. So these direct or indirect financial benefits total hundreds of thousands of dollars, according to the complaint. It also says that Klamath County has in its possession an investigative report from an outside law firm with more evidence about these ethics breaches, but that report hasn't been released due to attorney-client privilege.
And has DeGroot responded?
He briefly responded at a county commissioner meeting earlier this month or last month, because these allegations had made their way to social media. Here's DeGroot at that meeting.
It is not okay for a public official to use their position to help their family, but it is equally not okay to stop them from continuing the business they've worked hard to build over four decades by seeking the same opportunities available to everybody else in our community.
So what he's referring to there is the fact that his family has worked in real estate in Klamath County for quite a while. He was a mortgage broker himself and an investor. So he does admit that his family received these grants, but that those grants were open to everyone, and so there's nothing wrong with that. I think the point of the ethics complaint is that he didn't disclose that these would benefit himself or his family or recuse himself when appropriate when voting on these grants. But DeGroot basically framed this complaint during that meeting as a political attack. He is up for re-election this May.
Okay, so Justin, what happens next?
So the Oregon Government Ethics Commission will first conduct a preliminary review of the complaint, basically to see if there's anything, you know, there worth investigating. And then they'll decide whether or not to move forward and open a formal investigation. I want to note that DeGroot has faced an ethics investigation before. In 2021, he paid a settlement fine of $1,000 due to that investigation. Actually included a few complaints, but one of those ethics complaints was that he supported a construction contract involving a business that employed his son. So the Ethics Commission is in its review period right now for this latest complaint, and that can last up to 2 months. So we'll probably know before the end of this month whether or not they'll move forward with an investigation, and we'll be following that.
Okay, thanks, Justin. Roman, you reported on a double feature special. It wasn't a matinee, but at the Ashland City Council meeting. Why was the City Council meeting there?
Yeah, they were kind of talking about basically the City Hall and the city staff there. They were talking about how the 13 staff that were working in the City Hall recently moved into the Ashland Community Center without a lot of public acknowledgement. The Community Center has been undergoing renovations for a while. It's been closed since 2019 because of safety issues, and I think the city spent about $1.4 million renovating and getting it reopened, which they were hoping to do in May. But then city staff abruptly took over the Community Center for offices, which kind of angered a lot of residents. So the special meeting was called by City Councilor Dylan Bloom, and then they ended up approving a resolution to ban city staff from using the Community Center or the next door Pioneer Hall, which was also undergoing renovations, to use it as office space. And then we also heard updates on the City Hall repairs and renovations.
Okay, let's talk about the Community Center first. Why did the staff move into the Community Center?
It's because of the City Hall, which also had safety issues. So the Community Center had safety issues. Now City Hall had some. In February, there was a routine inspection. The city fire marshal found a broken roof rafter, and that created this immediate safety concern that the roof could collapse at any time. So city staff had to move out of the building. And right now, you know, the fire marshal needs to give permission to go inside the building at all. There's also other concerns related to the age of the building. You know, the repairs have essentially been neglected for City Hall. A lot of the parts of the building are past their end of life, like the roof, the HVAC system, some electrical systems, and lots of other stuff. So city staff had to move out, and city manager had to find another place to put them. She wanted them to all be in the same place, and so moved most of the staff into the Community Center, which they said was the only place that could fit everyone that the city owned.
So the City Council also talked about repairing City Hall. How is that going?
Yeah, they're currently working on repairing that roof rafter. It's not going to be a super expensive fix, only a few $1,000s, and they're expecting to do that in the next few months. That will make the building at least safe enough where they don't need permission from the fire marshal to enter the building. But during the City Council meeting, the deputy city manager said that likely doesn't mean staff will immediately move back in. They still need to address some of those other immediate concerns before it's safe to work there. The report that they had also mentioned that snow or a heavy wind event could be dangerous for the building.
Wow.
And so all these other immediate repairs are at least going to be another $500,000. And then there's millions of other dollars needed for other repairs that need to happen to the City Hall right now.
And you also gave us an update on a lawsuit, really a triple feature here.
I guess so, yeah.
Over the City Hall property. Can you give us a quick recap of why there's a lawsuit and what's new there?
Yeah, there's a lot to this lawsuit, but this is one of the reasons why the city has been wary about spending a lot of money to repair the building. The city isn't technically kind of outright own City Hall, actually. It's sort of owned by this family called the Hellman family. They gifted the property to the city back in 1884, and that includes the City Hall property and then a portion of the Ashland Plaza as it is now. The requirement was that the city use it as a public square, a town hall, and a jail. And if the city doesn't meet those requirements, then the property would turn back over to the family. So recently, the city filed a lawsuit against the heirs of the family. They're seeking to gain a clean title of this property without restrictions. They say basically that since the city hasn't operated a jail there since 1970, and since the family hasn't objected, they've basically abandoned their claim to the property. And so it's been a lot of work to track down the descendants. None of the Hellman family heirs actually live in Oregon anymore. But we did recently get a new filing from some of the family members who are fighting against the city's lawsuit. They essentially want the courts to say that the requirements are still being met and that the city doesn't necessarily have to operate a jail on that property. The jail cell also does technically still exist, but it's just being used as document storage right now. So they really want to keep the status quo and don't want the city to get a clean title. And the concerns from some community members is that if the city does get that clean title, they could sell the property to someone else rather than keep it as a city hall. But if the court doesn't want to keep the status quo, then the heirs argue that since the city has not been using it as a city hall since February because of these safety concerns, they aren't meeting the requirements and the property should go back to them. And then they also have another backup argument in this, that if the city does get to take the property, the family claims that that would constitute an illegal taking and that they should be compensated for that, especially because this property is worth a lot more money than it was back when it was gifted in 1884. So we're going to continue to follow this lawsuit and see how it all plays out.
So a lot of doings at City Hall. Okay. Well, thanks, Roman. Jane, you wrote a story this week about an unfair labor practices complaint that was filed in Klamath County. Who filed that?
It was filed by a union in the Klamath Falls City School District. That union is called the Klamath Falls Association of Classified Employees. So they represent people like bus drivers, health aid secretaries, things like that. And so they filed this unfair labor practices complaint against the school district at the end of March. There are a lot of different complaints in there. Basically, they are alleging that the district has tried to tarnish the union's reputation, tried to undermine the union, discriminated against members to discourage their participation in the union, tried to stop the union from participating in protected activities, like prohibiting them from holding a demonstration. The complaint also alleges that the district has disparaged the union's president for participating in union activity. So there's a lot of different pieces of it. And I should note that I did try to speak to the school district about it, but the school superintendent, Keith Brown, declined to speak to me for the story.
And has the union filed unfair labor practices complaints before against the district?
They have, in fact. This is the third one that they filed against the school district. So there was one that they filed in 2021, which was actually decided in the union's favor, although the district has appealed that. The ruling found that the district did violate state law by threatening a union member's job security because she engaged in protected activity, and by disciplining the union president for using the district's email system for union communication. So that was complaint number one. And the second complaint had a hearing held in January, but a decision hasn't been issued yet for that. That case includes allegations that the district tried to bar employees from wearing these t-shirts that linked to information about workplace rights because that content was too negative. So those are the first two, and then now we've got a third complaint going.
And how does this process work?
So basically, it goes through Oregon's Employment Relations Board, which helps resolve labor disputes and union matters and things like that. So basically, you can first file a complaint. There's an administrative investigation to sort of see what's going on. And then there can potentially be a hearing at that point. I watched an ERB hearing earlier this year, which was between a different school district and a different union. But it's before a judge. Both sides have attorneys. You get to make your case. You get to call witnesses. And then both sides will usually file legal briefs after the hearing ends. And then the administrative law judge has a period of time to issue a recommended order based on what they've heard in the hearing, what they've seen. And then the full actual board will make a final decision about the case called a final order. And so they can order remedies and penalties if they find that you did commit an unfair labor practice, for example. That might be ordering compensation like back pay. They can order an organization to rescind a particular change. So we're right now just sort of in the complaint filing, administrative investigation, very earlier period for this third complaint. Like I said, the second one just had a hearing in January, so we're waiting for the judge's decision on that one. And then, meanwhile, the union and the district have been negotiating a new contract for more than a year. And so that dispute is really focused on wages. Union leaders say that current pay has not kept pace with the cost of living, and the two sides have begun mediation to hopefully resolve that piece.
Okay, thanks, Jane. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website, ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or on your favorite podcast platform.